Okay, quick survey here this morning. I said we wouldn't impose too much on you talking about your marital failures, but how many of you husbands dropped your wife off at the front door under the awning to keep them from walking in the rain this morning? Okay, pretty good. How many of you women drove and dropped your husband off under the awning? Okay, you've got some work to do with these ladies here. How many of you just said, we live in Florida, you parked in your parking slot, and you just walked in the rain together? Okay, good. Well, I was very deliberate this morning. I wanted to wait till lots of people were out front so that when I drove up and let Tammy out of the car, that everybody would look at that. Isn't that so gentlemanly and so romantic? Unfortunately, we were still fighting in the car at that time, so everybody heard, no, that's not true. I'm glad that you're back. If you were not here last night, we'll try to catch you up. But we've been just laying some groundwork. We did some untangling of some marriage misconceptions, some marriage myths last night. And Tammy spent some time with the ladies talking about the role of the wife. And I spent a little bit of time with the husbands. And we'll reverse that. Tammy will talk to the wives about being a husband a little bit later. And I'll talk to, at least with the notes that I have been given from a wonderful Christian woman, about what it means to be the wife in the relationship. And then we're going to do some real, rapid-fired things after our breakout session and deal with a number of issues, probably any of which could have had the entire seminar, but hopefully we'll give you some good stuff. So this morning, you don't have to raise your hand, but have you ever noticed that a lot of times that people look just like their dog? I mean, anybody that has a dog, if you ever looked at them, Tammy saw someone at the airport earlier in the week and said, she looks exactly like her dog. Now, not in a bad way necessarily, and if you're going, I've never noticed that, go home and take a good look at your dog and then take a good look in the mirror. You might find out there is a scientific principle behind it. It's called the mirror exposure effect. And here's what it means, at least psychologically. We like the things that are familiar to us. In other words, one of the reasons that pet owners, especially dog owners, that they say find animals that kind of look like them is they are familiar with their own looks. And they go, well, there's something about that dog I just really, really like. Maybe it's his big nose or his floppy ears, and he never turns around to look at his own big nose and floppy ears, I guess. But they picked that animal. Maybe you've had a similar experience. I understand it's attached to the same lobe of the brain. You see a car that you're going to buy, and you're like, man, I've never seen that color ever. This is the car I'm going to buy. And then you drive off of the lot, and five of them go by, right? In other words, all of a sudden, you're attuned to the things. Well, there may even be more than science behind it when we look at married couples. If you are older, or if you have parents who are older, or even have gone out to eat with grandparents, have you ever noticed that they like the same place, and they order the same thing, and they want it their own special way? In fact, one starts the sentence and the other finishes it. Their religious perspective, their political perspective, their recreational perspective are all very much the same, if not identical. Well, I think that transcends science, and we're going to talk a little bit about how we go from being singled to mingled. How we go from a couple to something, I think, even more than that. Let me give you a quick update for those of you who didn't know. Here's what happened. God creates the world. He looks at it and he says, it is good. It's a word that means perfect, but not perfect simply that it is without flaw. It means everything is correct. It's in its correct orchestration. It is to its design and purpose. It's good. And then he looks over at Adam and he goes, not so much, right? He says, it's not good that man should be alone. And so there's this cavalcade of animals that go by. And I don't think it's simply for Adam to name them. You know, he didn't go giraffe, hippopotamus, rhinoceros. And God says, why rhinoceros? He goes, looks more like a rhinoceros than anything else that's come by, right? But the idea, I believe, is that he's saying, do you see everything around you? There is nothing suitable for you. There is not a companion for you. So he causes a sleep to fall over Adam. He extracts a rib. He creates a woman. There is more than just God's need for some substance to create substance, because he could speak to nothing and make something. I think he's giving us a lesson about the woman being alongside of a man. And he creates the perfect match. Now he sets the two there. And he looks at them and he says, now it's very good. Adam says, you are literally of my bones and of my flesh. And Jesus, as Matthew and both Matthew and Mark record it, speaking of that, said, and what God has joined together, do not let anyone seek to separate. So we have this beautiful picture of a man and woman being joined together. And though it's not called marriage, it most certainly is what we understand to be marriage. And there's a lot we want to talk about it. But I want to focus on that expression, the two shall be joined and become one flesh. Because in the minds of many, marriage is merely two people coming into an agreement until they don't agree anymore, and then, of course, they can pull apart. The best theological illustration I can find for it is the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Now, anybody who knows me very well, they know that I'm kind of a foodie. I like to try different foods. I like to try different restaurants. I don't like to go to the same restaurant the same time. But in all my years of eating, I have never to this date ever had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It is here that I often lose the credibility with many who are in the audience. But the fact is, I just think it's because my mom always made peanut butter and jelly with grape jelly, and I don't like grape jelly. I love peanut butter and honey sandwiches, and I've had a lot of those, but I don't like peanut butter and jelly. But I know this. You take two pieces of white bread, and if you put it on wheat bread, you're just being pretentious, okay? So you put a piece of white bread down, you spread peanut butter, smooth only, because chunky just tears up the bread, and you put that peanut butter on one side, and on the other side, you spread some jelly, and you join the two or jam the two together, right? So any three-year-old will tell you that the next step is very important. And that's where you peel the two pieces of bread apart to check the ingredients, right? So those of you who are long beyond the three-year-old level, when you peel that apart, what do you get? Well, on one side where there was bread and peanut butter, now there's bread, peanut butter, and a little bit of jelly, right? And over here on the other side where there was jelly, there's jelly and now a little bit of peanut butter. So, in other words, when we take two individuals, we marry them to one another. If you try to peel them apart, you get a little bit of them on each other. In other words, even if you try to tear them apart, this relationship has had an exchange there. And for many people, that's how we see it, that we have been joined together. And if there is ever a problem and the two start to peel apart, our thought is all we need to do is we need to jam them closer together. Push harder on the bread so that the peanut butter and the jelly get really mixed up together. Maybe it takes a series of Bible class lessons or sermons, or maybe it is a seminar, or maybe in severe situations there's time to sit down with a therapist or with a counselor. And so each one of those are pressing the two together. Maybe it is that there needs to be date nights, or there needs to be vow renewals, or there needs to be some activity, and the intention of that is to get this couple jammed close together. And if for whatever reason they try to pull apart, our initial thought of that is, how do we jam the two closer together? Because if you take that sandwich and press it really, really hard and you peel it apart, there's now a little more peanut butter on the jelly side, and there's a little more jelly on the peanut butter side, but guess what? You still can pull it apart. Now, when we are joined first and foremost, as Jesus said, we are joined by God. For many people, they understand the marriage relationship as being an agreement between her and him. That would make it a contract. That's where she says, I promise I will, parentheses, if you. And he says, I promise I will, parentheses, if you. And then when we get into the marriage relationship, all of a sudden, she's not doing what he thinks she's supposed to do. Or he's not doing what she thinks she thinks he's supposed to do. And the two say, time to break the covenant, to break the contract. You're not fulfilling your end of the bargain. Whatever that may be. Well, that's not the only way we're joined. We're joined by God's covenant. And here's what it looks like. And it's really important that you understand this no matter how long you've been married or even if you're not married, contemplating marriage. That the covenant with God is a covenant that God lays in front of us. In other words, it is not just an agreement between he and she. It's agreement between them and him. Okay? So it looks like this. God as the superior, God as the designer of marriage, God as the regulator of marriage, and God as the one who rewards as well as punishes marriages according to how they are played out, he lays the contract, if you will, in front of the couple. And so Tammy entered on our wedding day into a covenant, not just with me, she entered into a covenant with God, and I entered into a covenant with God, and it just so happened, since it's the same covenant, now we're in a relationship with one another. And so, when I have a young lady, she comes in, she goes, hey, my husband has been watching pornography on the internet, and Jesus said, if your husband watches pornography on the internet, and that's the same thing as committing adultery, and you can get a new one, can't I? I said, well, a little bit more to unpack there. First of all, Abraham Lincoln said about using the internet, it wasn't Jesus that said that. I mean, there's a lot to sort out there, right? Dan just looked up and he goes, I don't think it was Abraham Lincoln that said that either. But the point is this, that I ask that particular woman, and I mean it with all the sensitivity because there's no place for pornography in a marriage relationship. In fact, there's no place for pornography in anybody's life. But I said, so what you're asking is, how do you get out of the covenant that you made with God? How do you get out of the promise that you made, not just before God, but to God? In fact, if you look at the book of Proverbs, as the idea of wisdom and foolishness are explored, foolishness is portrayed as a wanton woman, as a wicked wanton woman, and is described as a woman who seeks to lure young, inattentive men into her bedchamber. She bats her eyes and says, hey, my husband's gone, why don't you come on in here? And the proverb writer says, forgetting the covenant that she has made with God. Because that's who the relationship... So, God joins us together by His rules, by His regulations, first and foremost. But He allows us to be part of this, and there are some other ways that we're joined. We're joined by agreement. God didn't just prearrange our marriage and one night in a vision said, Wayne, you're going to marry Tammy, and Tammy, you're going to... That wouldn't be a vision, that'd be a nightmare. But anyway, it was this, that matter of saying, guess what? Says, the two came to an agreement with one another. I said, would you marry me? She said, I would. On that day, we gave our vows. We made an agreement. We were joined by agreement. We were joined by law. Now, we went down at the time when Tammy and I got ready to be married in Oklahoma. He had to have a blood test. I'll just tell you, I hate the devil, but right behind him is a needle. I hate a needle. So I went in and I got my blood test, and guess what they did? They lost my blood sample. And they said, you're going to have to come back in for a test. And I told her, if that's not love, I don't know what is. Right? So I just punched myself in the nose and said, no, they took that draw out of there. And we went down and we filled out the stuff to get a marriage license. Now, it wasn't really permission to marry. It's a way that, first of all, they tax. But also, it's a way in which they keep a record of who's married to who. So we had, and it's by law, because if all of a sudden in our country, if we decide to dissolve that marriage, we have to go through some kind of a divorce proceeding, right? There's a law that is implemented, and there is a law that resolves that particular disagreement. So we're joined by law. We're joined by ceremony, right? We had the wedding ceremony. We got up in front, the minister, whoever's officiating, in front of God and these witnesses, do you promise? And we go through all of this joining. Then we're joined by purchasing a house. State of Colorado, where we used to live, that if you buy a house together as a man and a woman with the intent to live in that kind of relationship, meaning as a boyfriend or girlfriend, for example, you are, in the eyes of the state, married. And for you to marry again, you actually have to go through a divorce proceeding before you could marry again, even though you had never been, as we would put it, married. And so there is maybe that. Maybe it is the kids. Kids are a way we're joined. You've heard couples that said things like, well, we're having a lot of problems, but we're going to stay together until what? Till the kids move out, right? That's a couple that now is joined no longer about agreement, but by their kids. There is sexual intimacy. Often that they people think that that's the whole becoming one flesh thing, but it is simply another way in which God joins us together in that beautiful intimacy planned for and to be expressed only in marriage. So there's lots of things that join us, and for the most part, individuals who enter into marriage relationships and married couples believe that that's what marriage is, and that it is a joining. That it is a joining. Whether you want to call it adhesion, two opposite things or different things that are joined together, or cohesion, two similar things that are joined together, everybody sees marriage most of the time as being a joining. But Jesus said, they're joined together and they are becoming one flesh. There is a process that takes place here. This idea of becoming means to move from one condition to another condition. In fact, it typically speaks of moving from a less favorable condition to a more favorable condition. I used to say to move from a lesser state to a greater state, and everybody thought I meant leaving Oklahoma and moving to Florida. That's not what I'm talking about. We have a condition of singled, which is less desirable, and they are joined and are becoming. There is this process of moving towards, and this process doesn't just happen at a wedding ceremony. It doesn't just happen in the first few days or even the first few years of marriage, but it is an ongoing process, and I'm convinced that is a process that goes until what we often mark as the end of a marriage, that is, death do us part. In other words, it's ongoing. What's really important to understand is this concept of one flesh. Literally, the word means to be mingled or mixed. So what we have is we have that the two shall become one. The same word that God uses of himself in what the Jewish people call the Shema of Deuteronomy chapter 6. You maybe have sung the song or heard the particular passage. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one. The same word used there. In other words, we now have, though even in the, for example, in the Godhead, as we might call that, we have these personalities or characteristics, and don't ask me because I got to do light bulb or fire or ice, and none of that works for me to describe all that. But we have Father, Son, Holy Spirit. We have these differences within a singular. And now we have in marriage the same word used of two that are different, but they are becoming a oneness. They are becoming a singularity. This agreement by, we might say, by contract, paired along with this covenant perspective of God, we find the two that are becoming something different. And I guess if we're going to be childish enough to talk about peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, I can illustrate it with this Play-Doh here, if I can get it out of these little tubs here. I got in trouble not too long ago because somebody said that I was being kind of stereotypical about marriages, because I talked about the men being this blue Play-Doh and the girls being the pink Play-Doh. And so I went back and did some research, and here's what I found out, that in like the early 1900s, one of those magazines like Ladies Home Journal actually said that blue is the color for women, because it's softer, and that pink is the color for men because it's vibrant. we kind of associate men as being blue and women being pink. You figure it out on your own. Let's just say we've got a couple here, two individuals. So they come to the marriage relationship, and you know what they do? They join to one another. They have that ceremony. They're so much in love. Now, you still see him, and you still see her, but they're joined together, and we've got them joined together, and all of a sudden, they run into some difficulties, and so they decide it's just not going to work out, and not very much, but you can see even from in the back that when you peel them apart, the pink's got a little bit of blue, and there's a little bit of pink on here. And so what happens is, in a couple that is separated like this, all of a sudden we found that there's a little bit of damage done, right? A little bit of damage done. But we're going to get them into marriage counseling. We're going to press them together a little bit more, right? We're going to give them a little more instruction, a little more information. We're going to remind them about the truths and about the vows they made. And after some time, they say, I don't know about that. So they start pulling apart. Now, if you notice here, because we jammed them together a little bit more, it's working nice here in this humid climate, but you'll notice that there's a little more blue on this one. The jamming worked to some degree. They were a little more joined, and so when it tore them apart, it was a little bit left behind. And so we keep trying to find a way. You know what you need to do? You gotta just remember, you know, do that. Do date nights. Do renew your vows. Go on a second honeymoon. And I will tell you, I don't have the time and you don't have the patience to watch me set and pull these two apart. But that's joined. That's joined. That's not becoming one flesh. What we need to do is we need to have another force in this marriage. Because the joining here is the husband and the wife being pushed closer and closer together. But when we have an external force acting upon them, they go from joined to becoming one flesh. If you will, the two colors become mixed and mingled. Some of you guys might remember when you were a young man and you would build one of those plastic models, an airplane, a car, a ship. And when you did that, you had a little bit of, they called it cement, but really it was a chemical substance that acted on the plastic itself. In other words, it isn't glue. It doesn't connect the two pieces together like glue would. What it does is it chemically changes the plastic. And if you ever found out that you put part A to part B before you inserted part C, all of a sudden you had a mess, right? You had to cut that apart because the two had been fused together. That's what we're finding here, is that there is something that is actually changing the two individuals. And this is the process by which God works in a marriage relationship. It is why often in a marriage relationship they struggle trying to stay together when they are the only two forces doing anything about it. Now, you'll notice that if you can see up close here, you can still see a little bit of the pink. You can still see a little bit of the blue. But sometimes what happens, especially when worldly wisdom or worldly counsel comes, if there's some individuals that say, you know, you're losing your identity. Your individuality is no, you're just being selected and becoming what they want you to be. But the truth is, you're actually becoming something different. Now, I will tell you that at a microscopic level, this is still blue and this is still pink. But to the naked eye, as the two have been massaged, it's very hard to tell where one ends and the other begins. And this happens when two individuals, first of all, surrender or submit themselves to God. They allow Him to lead, for Him to guide, to Him to shape and mold them. It is God's working that mingles this couple together. And part of His mingling is the idea of being mutually submissive. Ephesians chapter 5 said, be submissive or submit to one another for the sake of Christ. It's not about a rearrangement of the family unit. It doesn't mean that the husband is no longer the spiritual head. But what it says is, work to be outdoing the other in service to the other. And so that's when God is doing. So now we have a humble husband and a humble wife, and they are submitting themselves not only to each other but to God. And all of a sudden, something's changing. Something is moving from joined to becoming one flesh. So let's imagine that the couple, though, and though it's pretty, it would be impossible right now for me to break this down into the blue and pink, but let's imagine that we have this couple and they're at odds with one another. She's stubborn, he's thick-headed, they can't find a compromise. They can't find a way to get back together. They talk to individuals, they talk to a counselor, they try this, they try that. They just can't get back together because the efforts are usually made on whatever stands between the two. Let's work through your addiction. Let's work through the abuse. Let's work through your misconceptions. And what we're trying to do is do what? We're trying to join them back together. But if the husband will resolve himself to being humble to God and to grow closer to Him, and the wife will work to being humble to God and to work to be closer to Him, what happens is the two, as they work towards God, even if it's not their intent, find themselves doing what? They're growing closer to each other because as God draws them to Him or as they pursue God, they're moving closer to what God wants them to be, and all of those things that were interferences are not there anymore. And they're allowing God to shape them. In our world, we find couples who don't have that element. We don't find that. Now, does that mean that there are no couples who have a perspective of covenant and God that aren't making it? Oh, no, they're making it. They're just doing a really, 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 really good job of joining. I know of only one wedding ever where on the day of the wedding, the bride or groom thought, well, if this doesn't work out, I'll just find me another. Tammy had a cousin that on her wedding day said, well, if this doesn't work out, I'll get me another one. On the day that that couple stands up, I think that most of the time, their intent is to be joined together, as they say it, for life. I promise. And then things come along and circumstances. And those that don't have that perspective of God and covenant, well, they find themselves being torn apart. Unjoined is what they do. But when they become mingled, it is a whole lot harder for the two to be pulled apart as they submit and they surrender. Now, I don't know how you feel about the color. I guess you would say that this is kind of a purple. It's kind of a gray purple. And it may not be quite as vibrant as the pink. It might not be quite as appealing to look at as is the blue. And if you were to look at this from a human perspective, you might find that some say, you know, that kind of a marriage that is met by a love that seeks the well-being of another other than what you can get out of it. When it's about humility and servanthood and being in subjection to one another, when it has all that churchy stuff about God and His guidance and all that in it, that's kind of silly. I can't say stupid anymore, otherwise I'd say that's stupid. We don't say stupid anymore, so we'll just leave it at silly, right? And they say that's foolish. That doesn't look very appealing to me. Well, there happens to be a secondary meaning to the word becoming. Not only does becoming mean moving from a lesser condition or a less desirable condition to a more desired condition, it also has a secondary meaning, which is used more in antiquity, or at least I should say, I don't hear it as much as I did when I was a much younger. Some of you ladies may recognize the expression. When a young woman comes out wearing a dress that looks really good on her, and they say, she looks very what? Becoming in that dress. Or that dress becomes her. What are they saying? It is desirable. Well, here's the thing is, we in our human perspective may not think that that gray-purple blob is very beautiful. But in our becoming, when we humble ourselves to each other and to God, we are becoming to Him. And here's why that's important. In fact, David, no extra charge for this, okay? I'm going to give this free. I'm going to give you something that a majority of people in our world have no idea about. I'm going to share that secret with you. It's the secret of life. It is why you are here. Not here at this seminar, here on this big blue marble spinning out in space. You were created for a single purpose, and that was to bring glory to God. He wants you to be happy. He wants you to have children. He's all right with you having a job. Certainly, He placed us on an earth that has beauty for us to enjoy. But the reason that He created you was not because He was lonely and needed some thick-headed, disobedient children to make Him feel loved. He created the world and all that's in it and on it and above it that He might be glorified. And simply put, we can't have a life purpose of bringing glory to God, and if you can imagine like it's a big chocolate cake, your favorite chocolate cake, and say, but this piece is for me. It's for her, it's for me, it's for us. It's for our pleasure, it's for our happiness, it's for our glory, and it can, even if it is not glory to God, that's okay because we're going to keep this piece for ourselves. That's true with every aspect. Our other relationships, our recreation, our occupation, those things can't be ours to keep because we don't get to keep that. I remember one time my wife made my favorite chocolate cake for, of all things, a church potluck. Right, exactly. Church potlucks are where we take that casserole recipe you got from your mom. Use that one for a potluck. But so you know what I decided to do? I was going to be helpful. On Saturday night, I went ahead and cut the cake for her so that it would be ready for tomorrow. And then I got to looking at it, and I thought, you know, if one of those pieces of cake were to slide right out of there, hypothetically, and the rest of the pieces were kind of maneuvered around, you would never even miss. And nobody at the potluck would know, except me when I went through for a second piece, right? And I'm like, she goes, did you cut the cake? And I'm smiling with chocolate in my teeth. And I go, yes, I did. And she goes, why? I went, I didn't eat any cake. You know, that's how it is. Sometimes we think that marriage is supposed to be becoming to us, pleasing to us for our benefit. But the bottom line is this. It's a covenant relationship with God. And at the end of it, God's objective in that covenant is not simply our happiness. It's not simply reproduction of the species. It's not simply our personal, individual, or collective pleasure, though all of that's part of it. He said, I gave you that, that you might bring glory to me in it. There is no glory in disobedience. In fact, again, let me mention a situation where we had a young lady that came to us, and she says, it's just not working out with my husband and I. There was not infidelity. There was not physical abuse. In fact, I'm not so sure that I would even consider what she was experiencing anything more than just the bumps that come along in living in a broken world married. And she wanted out of it. And we talked about all of those different kinds of things. And Tammy finally said, so let me ask you this question. In this particular situation that you now want out of, will you bring greater glory to God by staying and sticking with it or by separating and divorcing? Now, this isn't a comment about divorce, and divorce is a whole nother discussion. But the question is simply, she goes, yeah, but I'm miserable. Well, if your happiness is all that it's about, then dump him and find 100 other happies and just move from one to the next. But when God says, this is what brings glory to me for you to fulfill the covenant you made with me, He's glorified. You know what? The world may say, you know, she's foolish to stay in that relationship. He's foolish to stay with that kind of a woman. But God said, you are demonstrating your faithfulness to me first and foremost. And that's beautiful. That's the fulfillment of our life purposes. Finally, I might add that it has some other values too. That when we have that kind of a view of our marriage, that the next generation is given that view of marriage as well. We have watched in a number of occasions where a husband and a wife decided to divorce. And as we've watched, that divorce trickles down. The damage that it's caused to its children and to its grandchildren, often we find that that pattern of divorce then becomes a pattern of that family line. We always have somebody that comes along and says, not any longer. I'm going to be the one that's going to stop that in my family. And they do. And so we recognize that when we give our children the perspective that the answer to your problems is to divorce or to separate, then guess what? Even if they, ever been on the airplane when you give you that silly, just remind you that there are lights here and doors here, here, and here, and that there's that mask that falls down to put over your face to muffle the screams as the plane's going down, all those kind of things. Nobody pays any attention to that. But here's what I've decided. If the captain says we've lost all four engines and we're going to crash, every row becomes an exit row. Right? And so when in a relationship we say, well, God has made a provision within his covenant for divorce, even though he doesn't desire it, he has made a provision for it. And we go, but we never use the divorce word. We're not going to talk about divorce. We don't have any intent of divorce. That when all of a sudden our marriage, the captain of our marriage goes, looks like we've got four engines out, everybody races to the escape hatch. And we teach our kids that if it doesn't work out, eventually here's an out, as opposed to simply saying, you know what? This boat is going to sink with us on it. There's no way out. How about we start bailing water? And that's what we do. And then beyond that, especially for those of you who believe in God and follow Jesus and read his word and attend in a local community of Jesus followers, when Ephesians chapter 5 is written, Paul uses what should have been an understood about the relationship between a wife that's submissive to her husband and a husband who loves his wife to the point that he's willing to die for her, and that the two are mutually submissive to one another, that they might understand a far greater truth, and that's the relationship between Jesus and his church. And so when we have a skewed version of marriage, it impacts the version that we have of the church. And so you hear things like, well, I don't go to church anymore because I'm not getting anything out of it, right? Or I'm not staying at that congregation because I think it's spiritually abusive and not engaging. Or I walk away from God and religion in its entirety because it's not suiting me, because sometimes we learned that not from church going, but from the way we perceive something as, in at least in God's mind, as simple and yet grandly complicated as marriage. So I hope that you'll leave today with a little bit different view of your marriage, and that you'll think about the Play-Doh and how the two are mingled and are becoming one flesh, and to understand that that process doesn't end. And if you still want to go to Denny's every Christmas day and order the, I started to say fresh and fruity root and tootie, but I think that's at IHOP. But wherever it is, and you want it your own way, that's fine, because in time what God's doing is he's mingling you to live in a oneness of life.